Nearly every Sunday when we meet here as a congregation, we witness a revolutionary act, perhaps without even realizing it. I'm not talking about the act of being tolerant or forgiving or standing on the side of love, although some days those acts can feel pretty revolutionary. I'm talking about the simple act of sharing joys and sorrows, especially sharing sorrows. I say this act is revolutionary because it's something that we as a practice just don't seem to do in American culture or Western culture or maybe even world culture. Sure, we play around with the idea just about every day, asking others, "How are you? How are you?" But usually that's where we stop short, because 9 times out of 10, the answer is, say it with me, fine, fine. It's a word that's neither joyful nor sorrowful. It's the epitome of a neutral response. And yet, how many days of the year do you truly feel neutral? Are you feeling neutral today? Those who shared sorrows with us today certainly aren't. Yet we might not even know our fellow congregants were feeling anything less than fine if it weren't for that microphone placed there every Sunday. To illustrate just how revolutionary it is to share our pain with others and to be there for others when they express their pain, I'd like to use an analogy. Think of a sports team, maybe a Major League Baseball team, or, since I know it's on everyone's mind today, Michael Fox, a World Cup soccer league. When such a team wins a major victory, what do we witness them doing? They jump onto one another in one great big show of joy, hugging, embracing, celebrating, patting each other on the rump. What is that, anyway? Sometimes even crying happy tears of joy with one another. Were that same team to suffer a major defeat, how would the picture be different? I don't know about you, but I can't remember a time I've seen a team embracing one another in a mutual show of disappointment. No, what we see is each member of the team walking off the field one by one to sit alone with their misery in privacy. We don't hear about their pain, and maybe they don't want to talk about it. Maybe we don't even want to hear about it because we wouldn't know what to say. Life is full of wins and losses for all of us. I ask you, is the way you deal with pain really much different from the way we see it displayed on a sports field? When you're suffering a loss in life, be it the loss of a job, a loved one, your health, is it your habit to walk off the field and tend to your wounds in private? For many of us, the answer is yes. And even for those of us who take the who wants to be a millionaire approach to pain and phone a friend, there are times when we don't reach out to those lifelines because we figure those lifelines just won't get it. I know the feeling. I remember being at a book club meeting recently with a group of lovely, vivacious women of all ages and persuasions, some of whom are my very best friends in the world, and some of whom are in this audience. I looked around at them in awe of their beauty and vitality, and all I could feel was isolation. All I could feel was the full weight of my own loss. I felt the full weight of what it means to be a person living with cancer. I was diagnosed with breast cancer this past November, and I'm in the midst of what I call my year of living hairlessly. Yes, I was the only one of those women at that book club meeting who was wearing a wig. I might even be the only one in this congregation wearing a wig today. I was the only one with a major illness in that group. For a second, it felt as if I was the only one suffering in the world. But then, one of the girls mentioned her divorce, and reality came rushing back. The girl sitting next to her was in dire financial straits, and the one next to her was struggling to find her place in a new city where she had few friends. And the only reason I know about the pain these women are suffering is because at one point or another, they'd shared their sorrows with me. Somehow, Something inside them told them that their pain needed a witness. Pain needs a witness. Children know this intuitively. When a child gets a bump or a scrape, he goes running to mom or dad for a kiss, wanting someone to acknowledge the hurt, to help it heal. Children know empathy has curative properties. Children don't fear making themselves vulnerable to scrutiny or judgment. They just want someone to help make it feel better. When do we stop doing this? Why? Is it because we're embarrassed or ashamed of our pain? Is it because we don't want to draw attention to ourselves? Is it because we think we're not important enough? There will come a time in all of our lives when we will need to choose our response to great suffering. Some of us will choose to share that suffering with no one. It will be our deep, dark secret locked up and hidden away out of shame or a desire to spare others our own pain. Some of us will share our suffering, but only with the chosen few, perhaps realizing that yes, pain needs a witness, but still doubting that every witness can handle that pain. I can tell you the exact moment when I had to choose my response to suffering. It was a cold Friday evening in November of last year, the night after I'd received my diagnosis. I think it must have taken me a full day for it to finally hit me. So I was on the floor of my bathroom, sobbing and begging God to spare me for the sake of my children. I can't explain exactly what happened, but at a certain point, I felt myself falling, almost a physical sensation of falling into an abyss, into limitless despair. And then something grabbed me and yanked me back. Something told me this was not the right way. I didn't know in that moment what the right way was. I just knew I had to get up off the bathroom floor. In the days that followed, I started thinking about how I planned to stay out of the abyss. I never much cared for the analogy of cancer being a battle or a war, but at that point, it did feel as though I had to shore up my defenses. But how would I do that? What were my greatest strengths? I started thinking about the times in my life when I felt the strongest, and I discovered there was one common denominator. I felt the strongest when I had the support of my loved ones. And increasingly, in this hyper-connected world, my loved ones include both family and friends who live down the street, as well as friends I met years ago and haven't seen since, family who have moved away, but with whom I still keep in touch. Friends at work, friends in my book club, friends in this congregation, you've all helped lift my spirits at one time or another. I knew then there was no way I was going to make it without the whole lot of you. Okay, so we've established so far that I'm not one of those hold my cards close to my chest types. But did I really want everyone to know what I was going through? Everyone? Even my bosses? Even that weird guy on Facebook who only shows photos of his food? Even Gustav at work, who I did not consider a friend of mine? Could they all handle it? Could I handle them handling it? In the end, it was a practical decision. I didn't want to have to keep track of who knew what all about why my eyebrow hairs were falling out or why I was missing more work than usual or Yes, it's really a wig on top of my head. It was just easier if I had nothing to hide from anyone. But we all know what can go wrong when people have nothing to hide. They become oversharers. Okay, friends have hinted that I might tend in that direction, although I can't possibly understand why they wouldn't want to know what I'm thinking every second of the day. So I made myself a deal. I would share with anyone at any time, any emotion I felt comfortable sharing, any emotion, good or bad, was fair game. So long as this disease didn't come to define me, so long as I didn't become cancer girl. I wanted to show people, or perhaps convince myself at that point, that there was more to life than cancer. It feels silly to even say that sentence, more to life than cancer, because it seems so naively pessimistic. Of course there's more to life than cancer, but we're getting to that. So that's what I did. I just let myself be me. I know, what a concept, right? It took me getting cancer to try that idea out. But a synonym for being me is being vulnerable. I knew if I was going to be honest with everyone, I was going to have to be the one to reveal some of the ugly truths about cancer. Like how chemo will make your nose hair fall out, and when your nose starts running, it's like Niagara Falls. Okay, maybe that's oversharing. Okay, well, how about this? Cancer is time-consuming. Cancer is dark, but it's also darkly comical in many ways. Cancer will destroy certain things in your life, many for the better. Some, maybe not so. But think about the return on my investment in being open and transparent about my pain. Once my world got wind of what I was up against, a force field of love locked down upon me, like I had just passed a level in the video game of life and had been awarded a special life force power. The funny thing is, it kind of did turn out to be a life force power because beautiful things started happening around me, healing things. A woman I knew tangentially wrote to me and said she'd been terrified for a year to get an overdue mammogram, and could I help her? My own cancer was caught through early detection, so boy, did I get on that lady. She still teases me about nagging her, but it must have worked, because not only did she get the mammogram, which was clear, she also became a good friend, one of the friends who shaved my head before I underwent chemotherapy. The weird guy on Facebook who only posted food photos, he sent me a sweet and funny note of encouragement that made me see him in a whole new way. And then there was Gustav at work, whom I had given the side eye to on many occasions. He overheard me talking about my treatment and told me his brother was going through chemo too. And then suddenly, Gustav was pouring his heart out to me, telling me of his love for his brother and his sadness, and there was no way I was ever going to see Gustav the same way again. No more side eye. I was seeing him fully now, through the open window of my own transparency. Maybe instead a mirror is a more apt metaphor. I recognized his own words as vulnerability being mirrored back to me. I recognized it as connection. We were witnessing one another. And maybe it's not just the person suffering pain who needs a witness, but maybe witnesses need to go through that pain too. There is also healing power in giving others an opportunity to express empathy and compassion for our pain, because they feel it empathetically, they do. And when we allow ourselves to feel, we heal. Still, those of us who are on the witness side of this equation worry that we won't know how to respond to someone else's pain. We won't know what to say to this person suffering. Did you ever stop to think that maybe, like anything else, compassion and empathy just take a little practice? Maybe we'd have a better idea of what to say if we practiced reaching out a little more often to find out what works. I'll never forget what a friend of a friend, a cancer survivor, a total stranger to me, wrote to me in a beautiful letter. She said, "When we are stopped in our tracks and it is all up for grabs, we get to reassess. We find what we are looking for." I decided I was going to look for what was beneath the fear, the wonder of it all. And the wonder of it all is that I found what I was looking for. I found a path around the abyss. Like all strenuous paths, it has been a tough haul. But the view from the top, the view from where I stand right now looking at all of you, is amazing. Down below, I can still see the abyss, but it's far from me now, way out beyond that force field of love that still holds steady. I'm nearly finished with treatment, and I'll be able to ditch this wig just in time to wear a Santa Claus hat during the holidays. I'm thrilled to tell you all today that my prognosis is 100% chance of survival at the 5-year mark. So in other words, I'm healed. Okay, I know this is a UU fellowship, so I'm not going to make any claims about the power of prayer and love to heal the human body. But I can tell you straight up that your kind thoughts and deeds and all the food and your love healed my spirit and my soul, most definitely. After my health, the greatest gift I've been given is that I know now there's a simple reason why the abyss is so dark. It's dark because there are no windows to allow in the light that is other people, the light that is us. It's dark because there are no mirrors to allow us to see what we reflect. The way out is to allow in enough light to see the miracles around us, to see what it is we're all looking for. And what I believe, what I've learned, is that all we're looking for really is a witness to share life with through joy and sorrow, through darkness and light.